Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, a program that values the potential of knowledge, collaboration, and growth. The show is hosted by Denise Griffiths, who is known as an intensely curious nerd in stilettos. Each Wednesday, she is joined by co-host Ben Gay III, a renowned figure in the sales world. Ben is recognized for introducing The Closers, one of the most popular and powerful sales training materials ever produced. Having been mentored by Dr. Napoleon Hill himself, Ben has gained a wealth of knowledge in sales and life. Throughout the show, Denise and Ben delve into the world of sales, entrepreneurship, and success.
Good morning and welcome, listeners, to another episode of the Closers Inner Circle podcast, hosted by your partner in Success Radio. I am your host, Denise Griffiths, and together with my co-host, Ben Gay III, we are diving into the world of sales mastery as we do each Wednesday. And today we're diving into a topic that doesn't get nearly enough attention in the world of sales: gaps. You know, people love to discuss wage gaps, income gaps, wealth gaps. But what about the gaps that truly shape our success in sales? We're talking about skill gaps, effort gaps, and talent gaps. So write those down: skill gaps, effort gaps, and talent gaps. So it's time that we decided to shine a spotlight on these critical factors, and they often determine who rises to the top in sales and who gets left behind. The truth is, mastering sales isn't just about luck or being in the right place at the right time. It's about honing your skills, putting in the effort, and leveraging your unique talents to reach new heights. So throughout today's episode, we're going to explore how these gaps impact sales professionals at every level. So whether you're starting out now in your sales career, or you're a seasoned veteran looking to stay ahead of the game because it changes all the time. But again, not so much. Sales are sales, and we'll talk about that. But there's something here for everyone. Good morning, Ben. It's Wednesday. Chatting with you is always my favorite part of the week.
Well, I'm glad I get to chat. I've been sitting here quietly, passively, obediently listening.
Can I speak with your wife? Now, we're going to have a chat about your attitude. I'm
telling you. Good to be with you. I'm looking forward to it, as I always do on Wednesdays. I wake up Wednesday morning, think, all right, today Denise and I get to chat.
And goodness knows, I'm going to warn the audience right now, we never know where we're really going to go. We're old friends. We don't have any filters, and we chat about all kinds of things. So it's not going to be a straight linear line. Just come along with us and enjoy it. So we are talking today about gaps. I mean, you know, like I said, people talk about all these skill gaps, wage gap, you know, all these things, but they don't really talk about why these gaps may exist. And I don't know how that's happening, but, you know, you can always improve yourself, get some, you know, find a mentor, read books, study. Let's talk about that, Ben. What's your advice?
Well, that's true. And the gaps are obvious. Anybody's ever stood at the front of a room or, tried to be the sales manager has got to wonder, you know, this is so simple. How come they're not getting it? One of my best analogies is I tell people, when you get home tonight, get a bag of microwave popcorn and put it in the microwave and set it on whatever you set it on. In our case, it's a minute and 50 seconds at our altitude with our machine, and hit the start button, and then get out your watch and notice how long it takes for the first one to pop. And then that's sort of your marker. And then you go down to the last one. You know, in our microwave, if you go over a minute and 50 seconds, things start burning. So by then, when you open the bag, you knew when the first one popped, and then you heard that gap in the middle, that space in the middle, where a whole bunch of them popped, and then you get down to nothing's popping. And if you go beyond that, you'll destroy the whole bag. That's like running a sales organization. Some people will get it instantly. There's always one or two, and that's that talent thing and or experience. Some people have a natural talent. They don't know exactly what to do, but they've got a talent for learning quickly and for being good at things. I used to teach swimming, and there were some people that you think were born as fish. And you should jump in the pool and swim over there. And most people say, well, I don't know how to swim. Exactly. That's the reason you're here this morning. But in the meantime, you'd hear splash. Somebody has jumped in the pool and taken off. They've seen it on television or whatever. They're not afraid of things. They have a natural talent. Or they know more about swimming than they told you, one or the other, talent or experience. And some of that is you either got it or you don't. But the others, skill that you mentioned, skill and effort, those are both totally under your control. Skill is a, there are, I've written 35 books on how to sell and live successfully, personal development, human development, selling. I've probably written, I'm guessing, I've never counted them, 300 different closes. So my point is, it's all available. It's been written down or and or recorded and is available to you. You just have to do it, and some people just won't. Earl Nightingale told me once, he said, Ben, if you want to keep a great secret, write a book about it, put a copy in every library in the world, and your secret is safe. His point being somewhat sardonically, people don't read, they're not willing to learn, et cetera. And that's an oversimplification. There are some of us who are reading fanatics, but
Yeah,
that's,
you bet.
yeah, you're one, I know. But that's this morning, I may have mentioned this to you before. I just checked to make sure it was still there. I did some Eggos for breakfast. And while they were toasting, I got down the maple syrup and I looked on the back of the thing and the ingredients. And this goes back to reading, you know, why you're reading the ingredients on a maple syrup thing, because it was the only thing to read.
Cereal boxes.
Yeah,
I
cereal
used to read my
boxes.
brother. I hate cereal. I don't eat breakfast, but we were required as children to be at the table.
Yeah.
And I hate breakfast. It won't stay down. It just does not agree with me, and I don't like it. But I would be at the table and I would be reaching over to move my brother's cereal box that was in his face so I could read it.
Yep,
And he'd be clutching
exactly.
it to his chest, and I'd be snatching at him. Give me that box. You can
Well,
eat it. I just want something to read. If I have to be here, I need some entertainment.
I'm
Watching
with
you
you.
slurp, cereal is not entertainment.
The reason I like the maple syrup and the honey ingredients on the back is, in at least with the ones we have, there's one ingredient, maple syrup. And
Yeah.
on the honey thing, one ingredient, honey.
Honey, me too.
Yes,
And you need
that's,
to
I find
know
that
these.
comforting somehow.
Exactly. And you need, these days, you need to read those ingredients, get up, slightly different topic. But if you look at them and you're like, I cannot identify or pronounce 90% of this stuff, don't eat it.
Snack, I think, is the name of a snack bar. I may have it wrong, but anyway, their commercial caught my eye the other day, or my ear. They said, with ingredients you can see, and if you've ever seen a snack bar, you know, the almonds and the whatever are sticking out of it. They're everywhere. But they said, with ingredients you can see and pronounce.
There you go. And these days, the stuff that we're putting into our bodies, I think we're becoming more and more aware that it's killing us. It's poison.
Well, back to reading. Skill is readily available. It takes practice, but you can get the basic information in your mind. Hundreds, if not thousands, of books have been written. If you throw in how to be successful, thousands of books have been written about how to be successful. A subcategory of that is how to sell. As I said, I've written 35 of those, so I know there's plenty of information around. And other people have. Zig wrote several books before he passed. J. Douglas Edwards, all these people wrote it down, put it down. It is available, it is known. So if you don't have the skills, you haven't been trying long enough, or you haven't been trying at all. It's solvable. I have, which I'm a love of reading, I have five places that I tend to read, either go there to read or at my desk. There are times when I've got 3 minutes to kill or what have you because of a gap or a computer connection didn't work properly. We had that problem this morning. In those little gaps, I pick up the top book on top on the reading pile, and there's five reading piles that I have. New book comes in, and several do every day. They go on the bottom of a reading pile, and when they come up, they come up. But I don't have any wasted time. You will never see me sitting staring ahead, with blank eyes and slack jaw. I'm reading. If I got nothing productive to do with my job or my family, I'm reading. I fill in all the gaps. We used to have a rule when I was growing up, mother and dad said, never give Ben, because they tended to give me books as Christmas and birthday gifts. They said, never give Ben a book until we're done. In other words, all the presents have been opened and,
I'm
because
picturing it
we
now.
lose him. He opens up the book and he's gone. So when someone says, well, I don't know what to do, go to your local, oh yeah, and I don't have the money to buy books. Go to your local library. Believe it or not, if only by accident, they've got books on how to sell. Many libraries have my books, the Closer series. So for free, you can get books and get started. And once you get started, the money will start to come. So skill gap is, I acknowledge there is one. There are millions of them if we start counting individual people. There is one, but the good news, it's 100% solvable.
It
Effort.
is. It
Go
is.
ahead.
And how can salespeople identify their own skill gaps? I mean, you don't know what you don't know.
Assume that you don't know anything.
All right.
I don't go through a sales book when I get a new one from a friend. I don't go through it looking for things I don't know. I go through all of it, and the reason I do is I get refreshed on things, yes, and I get phraseology that perhaps I haven't thought of ever. I might even steal it and put it in my next book.
No, we relocate.
Well, yeah, we research.
Words matter. Yeah, words matter. I
Chris.
do the same thing with the books that come here because I have a lot of books on sales. I have a lot of books on leadership, a lot of them. Every individual who has written this book has their own way of communicating with me,
Yep.
and I take that very much to heart.
I just got a book the other day from Dr. Criswell Freeman. And it's the salesman's book of wisdom. Probably you shouldn't make that the salesperson's. See how sensitive I'm getting? The salesperson's book of wisdom.
I caught that. I was trying not to, I call it kersnorkeling. It's a rude sound that I make.
Here's one. I just opened the book, page 72, and these are quotes. But the top one. By Herbert Marcus of Neiman Marcus. There is never a good sale for Neiman Marcus unless it's a good buy for the customer. Now, that was worth opening up the book, and I'll put it somewhere in my subconscious vocabulary, and it'll probably pop out at some time. One of my favorite Neiman Marcus stories is, pardon me, it was Nordstrom's, but the same concept. Somebody walked into Nordstrom's, the original store, with a tire to return because the original business was tires and the original business in that store was selling tires. I think it's in San Francisco somewhere. But anyway, they walked in with Nordstrom and the person said, the clerk said, do you remember how much you paid for it? And, whatever, $39.99. Super. Wrote up, you want cash or do you have an account? You want cash or credit? And solidified the deal and gave them the $39. Nordstrom hadn't sold tires in, at that point, 20, 25 years. But you're a customer and you're going to be happy before you leave this store. Oh, again, quoting Herbert Marcus, never a good sale for Neiman Marcus unless it's a good buy for the customer. Now, that was worth picking up Dr. Freeman's book this morning, even if it was only popped up in the middle of a conversation between you and me. Speaking of returns, I worked at Macy's in Atlanta. It was called Davison's back then, but it was Macy's. And our big rival and who dominated the business was Rich's. And they're now out of business for some bizarre reason. I guess just department stores don't make it anymore, but they dominated the southeastern United States. And when you said you worked for Davison's or Macy's, you sort of whispered it because you didn't want them to say, "Why don't you work at Rich's? They're far better." My mother, I will give her my employee discount at Macy's. And she said, "Well, I appreciate that, but I really want to go to Rich's." I said, "We sell the same stuff. We get them from the same people. We have the same guarantee." She said, "I know, but if I really had to return some." I said, "Mother, we have the same guarantee." "I know." And she'd pat me on the arm and walk away. The conversation was over because Rich's had created a brand of "we make our customers happy no matter what." And they had a return window on Peachtree Street, a display window of things they had taken back over the years, high top shoes that were sold, Rich's, somebody sold them to somebody before the Civil War. Somebody found them in an attic, took them back to Rich's and said, "Blah, blah, blah. How much did you pay?" "Well, I don't know. It was my great grandmother. How much do you figure she paid?" "What would you say?" They gave her the money and put the shoes in the window. What used to crack me up and make me mad, our brand for, private label brand for steam irons and electrical appliances was AMC. I never knew what it stood for, but that was our brand, and everybody knew it was our brand. In the window at Rich's were several AMC products that people had taken to Rich's to get their money back. And rather than saying, "Oh, that came from Macy's, Davison's up the street," they gave them credit and put it in the window. And
Their
that's the
marketing
reason.
team knew what the heck they were doing.
Yeah. My mother, that's the reason, I know if I buy it from you, I know you say it's guaranteed, but I know Rich's takes back your stuff. It's in the window.
Yeah.
So
That did they ever make a museum piece out of that? That would make a great museum.
they're out of business, so I don't know
Oh
what happened
no.
to the stuff in the window, but
Oh.
it was they were just almost unbeatable. Roughly the same pricing, and we would match any price, as would they. So roughly the same pricing, the exact same products. Our private label stuff was made wherever their private label stuff was made. There are companies that do nothing but private label work, shoes, appliances, whatever. So everything
Canned
was the
meats,
same, but they
seriously.
had, yeah,
Canned
they had,
food, same thing.
yeah, exactly. My father was a food broker, and I was amazed one time we were on a tour of a factory somewhere, and cans of, I'll say Campbell, but I really don't remember what it was. Cans of Campbell soup are coming off, and then right at the end, this machine wraps a label on each one, and they were coming off at high speed. It was like watching a machine gun. And then a guy came up and pulled a lever, and all of a sudden, the Campbell soup was Del Monte. Because what he had done was change the labels, didn't change the can, didn't change the ingredients. He had changed the label. And that, for me, that was a big breakthrough. I said, "Dad, you didn't tell me this." He said, "You never ask." So I
I
said,
mean,
"So you
some
mean
people.
the Hunt stuff we sell isn't always Hunt's?" And he said, "Well, it's always out of the same factory."
There you go. And honestly, there are some brands that you can tell they're not the ones that you grew up with or that you actually like. You can tell what they are.
Yeah.
But for the most part, don't sweat it. Get the cheapest you can get.
But yeah, because they don't have a cheap machine somewhere, and you can't save enough being cheap. I always like Skippy. So do I. I'm trained. If I see it on the shelf, I probably grab it instead of some brand I never heard of. But what's more important to me is chunky. I like chunky peanut butter. And once I find Chunky, I don't care who made it because I've seen the machine where it went from Skippy to whatever to whatever to whatever with a pull of a lever. But branding is the point I'm trying to drive home. You need to have a brand. You need to be known as the person who has the skill set and who you mentioned effort as a gap, who will put in the effort, will come early, stay late, work on weekends, will give you his or her private cell phone number that you can call at any time if you have a problem. You're not going to go through a phone tree or chain or whatever they call them. Looking for somebody willing to solve your problem. If you buy from me, I'll do all that for you. All you have to do is tell me you're unhappy in some way and we'll solve the problem. So that's the effort gap, but there's many, many shades of the effort gap. When do you get there? How long do you put in? Do you go to the meetings and try and learn? That would be the effort gap and the skill gap. But totally fixable. And the talent one is fixable if you have enough skill and effort, because you will over time develop the talent. You may not be a natural. Zig was a natural. He came out of his mother's womb laughing, giggling, and telling stories. And had just a wonderful personality and the ability to communicate it effectively. So he was a natural. I was not as good a speaker, or as I was voted wittiest in my freshman in my senior class in high school, most popular this, funniest this, and so on. And then I met Zig and discovered, oh, you're not funny at all. That's funny. You're not funny, but you can get funny. That's when I started carrying his water pump around. Our deal was I'll carry it into meetings so you're not seen carrying it, which you shouldn't be, and you're not getting rust all over your suit. I'll do that in exchange for I get to sit on the front row and have lunch or dinner with you any day you give a speech where I can ask you questions. So slowly I developed some what appeared to be natural talent that really wasn't, and increased my skills. And effort is just that's the easiest of all of them to fix. With self-discipline. Come early, stay late, work on weekends, spend your time around people who are successfully doing what you want to do, and watch what they do, and take notes, and read the books, and listen to the recordings, and go to the seminars.
And
And
that doesn't mean to say that you need to copy them. There's
no.
nothing worse. People will come to me and say, Denise, I need a website and I want it to look just like this one. No.
No, I can do better than that.
We can do better. It's
Yeah, and
right.
B, why would you want to do that? There's if that were true, there would be one super website in the world and all of the websites would look just like it.
Oh, we're talking about Amazon now.
Yeah,
Yes. But no,
exactly.
you're right. And when you're talking about, skill gaps, and you've got to do the work, and it really shouldn't have to be work. You're reading, like, with Zig Ziglar, you were out there watching him, having lunch with him, having dinner with him, hauling that pump around. But look at the stories that you've got, and look at the wisdom that you were able to kind of chip off of him and, put it on your own shoulder and say, I can do this.
Yep.
You didn't copy him. You've never copied him, but you made it a point to absolutely learn from him. And then you taught other people. So you're right. These are all doable things, but you have to want to do it and you have to have a strategy for it or three strategies. And you need to have, I love what you just said, the self-discipline to
Yeah.
do all of these things.
That's one of the th thing. I don't have it because I do so much of it, I don't need to write it down. But in my daily success system that Dr. Napoleon Hill helped me develop, demanded that I develop, you put aside time for things. And if reading was a problem for me, I would have on my calendar reading, parentheses, 30 minutes. move up. That means do it and move it up to the next day. And for those of you with computers and so on, you can put it in once and be done with it. I personally like to operate with a written daily planner, one full page for every day. And then there are things. Today, for instance, highlighted in yellow, it says 10 a.m. Denise show. And then if I flip up a few Wednesdays, I'll come to one that says 10 a.m. Denise show dash move up 3 or 4 weeks or whatever. So it's always there in front of me. On a personal note, I've also taken out the garbage and the grass clippings. Those are two separate endeavors today. And I have fed the fish in our fish pond. They really appreciate a disciplined approach to feeding them so they don't starve to death. They're in the back of a guest house. Except when I'm feeding them, I never look at the pond. I forget it's there, but it pops up on my calendar every Wednesday, and there's another day I do it. I think it's Monday or whatever, tied in with something else I do behind the guest house. So it's this discipline to write it down, which, by the way, plays into the gap thing we're talking about, in that a system will overcome many of your problems with skill gaps, reading gaps, listening gaps, or whatever. If you write it down and make it part of your system, you don't even have to think about it. And then I write down things that are hourly and early in the day on a separate piece of paper, in addition to the calendar, and I scotch tape them to the bathroom mirror that adjoins our bedroom. And she'll say, "Are you talking to anybody today?" "You, I know, but the rest of the world," I go, "I don't know. Look on the note on the mirror." It frees you up. A system, a daily success system, frees you up, frees your mind up to not having. I don't spend any time trying to remember things. If I got it written down, it's handled. And Gigi gets tired of. She'll say, "Oh, so and so and I, a cousin of hers, Karen Harnden and Gigi, are having lunch next Tuesday." And I said, "What time?" She said, "Well, are you coming?" I said, "No, I'm going to put it on the calendar to make sure you come." And that morning, when you wake up, scotch tape to your mirror will be a reminder that you're going to meet Karen. And by then, I'll know where you're going to meet her, and that'll be in the note. So systems can make up for huge gaps. Going to, people say, "Yeah, there's a seminar coming to town." I don't hear that much in Placerville, the little town we're in now. But when I was in Atlanta and the San Francisco Bay Area, there was always a seminar coming to town. People say, I said, "What's it about?" "Selling." "Yes." "Well, I haven't told you when, where, or who's doing it." "Doesn't make any difference. I'm going. I want to be in a room with like-minded people. Hopefully the speaker's good, but I've never been to a seminar where I didn't get my money back." I'll give you an example about learning. Joe Sugarman, Blue Blocker sunglasses and so on, became a friend of mine, and he had a seminar at his house in Rhinelander, Wisconsin. And much as I love Joe, the truth is, if you'd ever read one of his full page story-like ads. He used to do full page whatever, and it was always a story. It was a narrative about why you ought to buy, fill in the blank, the blue blockers or whatever. Well, I discovered after getting there rather quickly that it was, if I'd read the ad, I pretty much got it. All he did was explain the ad over and over and over again in great detail, and I was going, and it was in his house. So his, I remember one child kept running in and hugging his legs or whatever. Instead of saying, "Get the hell out of here," he'd pick him up. "Ooh, I love you." Well, I love him too, but I paid $3,000 to do
Right.
this thing.
Put the kid in the closet.
Yeah, exactly. Bound and gagged, put him in the closet. But with my $3,000, and that's about $25,000-$30,000 in today's money versus when I went to Rhinelander, Wisconsin, to this thing, it was one of the most valuable seminars I ever went to
How so?
because I was in a room with people who could spend $3,000,
Right.
$30,000 to go to a seminar that puts you in with a little more interesting crowd than the 1995 people at the Holiday Inn. And so he was the head of this. I remember the chairman of the board of Sinclair, the motor company, oil company, gas company. But sitting right next to me was Joe Carbo, lazy man's way to riches, the man who created what Sugarman was doing, long involved ads and that you'd love to read and so on. And I said, "Hi, my name's Ben Gay." He said, "I'm Joe Carbo." And I said, "Oh my God, my seminar is now," and I didn't know yet it was going to be a bad seminar, but I said, "I've just gotten my seminar money back." I said, "Here's the deal," because there was a hotel nearby that we were all staying at, and it had a nice restaurant and a bar. I said, "You are buying no meals. They serve breakfast and lunch at Carbo's buffet, at Sugarman's buffet style. But at the restaurant, we were on our own." I said, "You're paying for no meals and no drinks." It was sort of like a Zig Ziglar deal. "But I am nailed to your side." He said, "Deal," and shook my hand.
He didn't try to shove you into the closet with the kid.
No, he said, "Now for
You
drinks."
got
And it
lucky.
turned out Carbo was a pretty good drinker, so I should have just said meals, but it was Zig. See, drinks and dinner didn't mean much because all I ate was dinner. So anyway, I attended three seminars that were wonderful at that one seminar. One, all the people I met, some of whom I'm still in contact with if they haven't retired or died, Joe Carbo himself, and then some stuff from Sugarman. It was just he could have phoned in what he shared with us, and the
But he
kid
got
in.
you all together.
But he got us together.
Right.
And I learned so much at that se session. So there's an example of skill s gap closing. When I ask a question about advertising or marketing, I frequently go, "What would Carbo do in this situation?" And I've got a binder full of Carbo ads and some Sugarman ads, but you can't tell where one stops and the other one picks up because Sugarman blatantly took his ads. Now, before that sounds like criticism of Sugarman, I sold 10.5 million copies of the Closers with a full page ad in all the trade magazines, the sales magazine, Success magazine, Entrepreneur, et cetera. And they look remarkably like a Carbo ad. Remarkably.
So you just changed a few words around.
Well, I changed all the words, but the layout and the look was the same. And I laugh. I've been criticized by advertising groups for running it. The headline on the ad was one word, greed, GREED. And I came up with it while I was with Carbo at that seminar. I said, "I'm going to do a thing for the closers." And I said, "Here's my headline, greed." He said, "Perfect. No one who turns to that page will turn on without turn on, go on in the
No, I
magazines
mean, I would have
without
no
seeing."
doubt
Yeah,
it.
you got to find out what's he talking
Yeah,
about,
yeah.
greed.
Do I hate this guy or do I love him? I need to know.
Exactly. And then early in the copy was unfair advantage. This gives you an unfair advantage, and stuff like that. So that sold 10.5 million copies. 2 million before it was in bookstores. You had to just read about it and buy it. You couldn't thumb through it or anything. That came from Carbo and Sugarman to a degree. And it closed my skill, helped close my skill gap. Effort has never been a problem. Self-discipline sometimes is, but I've always been. I won a national sales contest year long over Zig, and thousands of other people, but Zig came in second. And the difference was I got up early, I stayed up late, I worked 7 days a week, including weekends. And the difference by which we, Jimmy Rucker and I, topped Zig and his partner, Mel Lanius, was the difference between the sales Jimmy and I made at the last opportunity meeting of the year-long contest. Meanwhile, I mean, I found that out when I became president of the company and went through the records. That last meeting generated the difference between us, difference between presidency of the company and second place or Rolls-Royce. That Zig got that. And although there were days I would offer him the keys to the front door if he would give me the Rolls and take over the job. But the difference was effort there, strictly effort. Zig that night was holding a meeting. He was holding a victory party in Columbia, South Carolina, because he believed he had won the contest. So you never want to celebrate your victory till you have the trophy in your hand and the check has cleared the bank.
Mostly the check.
Yeah, both.
Yeah.
Arnold Palmer tells a story about he was on the 18th green, or yeah, 18th fairway of a golf tournament, and he was up by two, and he's Arnold Palmer. I mean, that, the tournament is over unless he's eaten by an alligator or something. And he's coming down the fairway, and a guy who knew him, a personal friend, said, "Arnie." And he went over and talked to him. He said, "Congratulations." He said, "Thank you very much. Accepted congratulations for the thing." Then duffed his next shot,
Ow.
came up short on the green, and two-putted and wound up losing the tournament. And he said, "There isn't a golf lesson in here. There's a psychological lesson. Never take congratulations and credit for something that isn't in the bag." Because he said,
Yeah.
stopping to talk to my friend and accepting the congratulations for my victory is what cost me my victory.
That ego thing got in his way.
Yep.
Wow. I wanted to ask you, Ben, we're talking and I'm not actually getting notes from people, but I can almost see them coming. You know, you're saying you need to, work all the time, stay late, do this, do that. And I'm hearing people going, but what about my family? What about my downtime? You work all that in. You have
Yes.
never given up any of that. In fact, you have, in your day minder, you have dates with your wife.
Exactly.
Vacations with your wife, you work all that in.
Dr. Hill, when he first came to work for me, was, staying up at the house and watching me work and taking a couple of day trips on the Learjet, so he sort of got the pace. And he said to me one day, "How do you fit?" And by then he had me on the day planner and the daily success system and so on. He said, how do you handle your family matters?" And that was a very personal question to him, because he had had four, I can't speak for the last lady, but I know the pattern. He'd had four unsuccessful, unhappy marriages and poor relationships with his children. And so Mr. Success was missing a big part of his life. He would have given anything to have a personal, wonderful family life through all those years. So he said, "How are you doing your family and all?" I said, "Oh, I fit them in the nooks and crannies." And
Oh my.
he said something to the effect of, "Ah, we've found the problem. Get your day planner." So I went and got the day planner and sat down with him at a conference table, and I said, "What's up?" He said, "Well, what we're going to do is we're going to schedule family time with your wife and child." Only had one at the time. "And then we're going to fit the business into the nooks and crannies." I said, "Well, I don't know if that's possible. I'm awful busy, 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 busy." And he said, "No, it's possible. You've heard that the work will expand to fit the time allowed, and that's a negative. That it will, in fact." He said, "It also will contract to fit the time allowed. If you only have 2 days to put a talent show together, you put it together in 2 days. If you have 14 days, it takes late into the 14th day to put it together. It will adjust." So he said, "Where do you," he said, "I hear you talk about the coast a lot." And I said, "Oh, yeah, Carmel, Mendocino. We love the Northern California coast." He said, "When you go over there, what do you do?" I said, "Well, we don't go as frequently as we should, but when we go, 4 days is about all I can take not doing something." And this is before cell phones and laptops and all, when you were at the coast, you were out of contact unless you phoned in from a payphone. And I said, 4 days is about what I can do and we're comfortable with. So he said, all right, so you're going to go over on a Wednesday night after you put in a full day of work. You're going to be there Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then come back Sunday night or early Monday morning. Would that be a nice weekend? I said, yeah, that would be perfect. That's sort of what I'd like to do, and we actually do it occasionally. He said, well, you're going to do it 4 times this year. Open up your calendar. And we went through the calendar. We blocked out 4 long weekends. Then, how many times do you have dinner with your wife? And I'm using wife because it wasn't Gigi. It was my first wife, Marcia, who's passed away. He said, how many times do you go out with your wife for dinner? And I said, oh, almost every night. He said, no, without distributors and employees. I said, oh, hardly ever.
I like the way you said that. Hardly ever, like a little boy voice. You knew you were in trouble.
Yeah, he got me. So he said, well, let's pick out a night. And I think we picked the standard Friday night at first. He said, you'll be doing less work. I know you work, but you'll be doing less work on the weekends. And Friday is late Friday afternoon is sort of part of the weekend. So let's block out Friday nights as date night. And you can't take away a date night if something important comes up without replacing it that week with another date night. In other words, you can't say commit to something on Friday without adding it to Wednesday, for instance. And the 4 day weekends at the coast, those are sacrosanct. Nothing takes away from those. And I started to say, well, what if, he said, nothing. You got a year's notice in advance, and we just put an X in your calendar, blocking out that day. So nothing interferes. Your own death might be a factor, but short of that, nothing interferes.
Well, I'm glad he added that codicil, but yeah, he's
Yeah,
right.
that could be a factor. So I mapped that out. And so when I say work 7 days a week, come early, stay late. And I don't do that with the fervor I used to do it. I was really referring more to people starting out. I'm behind the power curve. I'll never be Bob Zewinski or, whoever the top salesperson is. Yeah, you will. Jim Rohn used to tell a story. He said, if you close 90% of your sales and I only close 70% of my sales, I will beat you. And that's what he was referring to because of effort. I'll make the calls, extra calls it takes to have 70% beat 90%.
I'm doing the math. It ain't working. So explain that to me in Homer Simpson terms.
If somebody is closing 90% of the, here's an example. I'll use me. I close 86% of the sales I attempt to close. And that's not selling, taking an order because somebody wanted to buy a book. That's taking an order like I did yesterday, where somebody wanted to read a book and see if they wanted to put it in. And before I hung up, they had bought 2,000 books. 1,000 of the closers part one, 1,000 of the closers part two, and their little test will be a national test, and then they will go to everyone in their organization. So that's the type of sale I'm talking about at an 86% closing rate. You call because you might want to have Mr. Gay come and talk to your sales organization. Well, that's $15,000. That I count as a sale. I close 86% of real sales, not single books. So now that you know I close 86%, here's how you beat me. I don't work 7 days a week from early in the morning to late at night anymore. I don't have to. I'm prepared to, I just don't have to. And with computers, of course, I'm available, and cell phones, I'm available 24 hours, 7 days a week. I have to remember to turn it off because somebody in the phone off because somebody in England will want to buy a book 9 hours before I get up normally. So you have to make some little adjustments here and there. But once you know my closing rate and how I work, All you have to do is get near me in the closing rate and work harder.
Oh, okay. I got it.
70% of 200 is more than 84% of 100.
Okay. I'm
So
gonna
that,
act like I understood that.
yeah,
I got it.
that's how I beat Zig. It was only one sale difference, and I wasn't as good in front of a room as Zig was at the time. Some would argue I'm still not, but I have my own style and I do just fine. But the closing, my personal closing rate versus Zig's in those early days, his was probably higher. So I probably got within striking distance by coming early, staying late, and working on weekends.
Making that last push that you didn't even know was a push. You're
Right.
just doing your job.
Just exactly. Jimmy and I had booked that engagement and helped fill it up, sent people to it. And I didn't know where I was in the contest or really cared. My dad raised me not to be a contest guy. Somebody, I forget who it was, one of his clients, Tutman Thurlow, they import beef from Australia and New Zealand. I think it was them, said one day at a food brokerage convention, I was tagging along with my father. We were going from company suite to company suite. And they said, and Mr. Gay, if you beat last year's volume, and he was, if not their top broker, one of their very top brokers, we will give you a console television. And that, remember the consoles had the record player on the left and television on the right, and it was a big piece of furniture. Well, they were a big deal back in the day before thin flat screens and so on. And what do you think of that? And he said, you can pardon my French, ladies and gentlemen. My father said to one of his most important clients, you can take the television and stick it up your ass.
Ow.
And I thought, whoa, what brought that on? And they said, we don't understand. Well, they'd worked with Dad for years, so they probably should have understood. He said, I sell all of your product that is humanly possible in the southeastern United States without bribes or incentives. So if that earns a television set, ship it. If it doesn't, don't sweat it. And then we went back to a very happy, friendly meeting, and I'm thinking I'm going to watch my father get fired right in front of me. Well, he not only didn't get fired, we'd been home 3 or 4 days when a television set showed up.
Oh,
And I
they took
said,
him at his word.
here. I don't even think the contest had started.
Right, but they understood what he was conveying to them, that he was doing everything he could and should do, and he didn't need to go over and above that because there was no need. He was already doing everything that he
Not
could do.
only no need, he couldn't.
Well, that's, yeah, I was going to say that too. I
Yeah.
mean, how much further can you go? He couldn't. I mean, he was already doing everything that he needed and could do.
So that was sort of my attitude towards contests. I knew there was a contest going on. It got mentioned from time to time, but it was a year-long big mistake. And it was only one top prize, big mistake. Everybody but me knew that either Zig or Jim Hearn, who was another top distributor, or me and Jimmy were going to win it. So after a month or two, they forgot there was a contest. They didn't care. They knew they weren't going to win it because it turned out the mystery prize, the first prize was presidency of the company. Second was a Rolls-Royce. Next was a Lincoln Continental. Next was a Thunderbird. And then it dwindled down into steak knives and desk sets and so on. So even the top distributors quickly figured out they were going to probably get some steak knives out of the deal or a desk set, and they didn't care. I, on the other hand, had the different thing. Rucker and I are working from early in the morning to late at night, 7 days a week. And if that wins something, it wins something. I don't care. And it was hard to get excited about the mystery prize because I didn't know what a mystery prize was, which was sort of the reason when I won it, they called and said, you've won the contest. I said, all right, what's the mystery prize? Well, you have to come to California to just find out. So I flew out to California, met with William Penpatrick, the owner of the company, and rather quickly said, what's the mystery prize? He said, I'm glad you ask. You're going to be president of the company. I said, that's a mystery prize? I said, yeah. He said, yeah. I said, what if somebody had won it that you didn't like? He said, I would have changed the prize. That's the reason it was a mystery prize. But he said, I know you. I'd done a couple of short speaking trips with him and introduced him at some meetings. So we'd sort of gotten to be, we weren't pals yet, but he knew who I was. But that was, oh, and here's a lesson learned from that. Talk about skill gaps. The lesson learned was the reason I didn't know or had forgotten about the contest and didn't really care about it was part my father, and part it was a year long, and part there was only going to be one winner. So I lost interest. When I became president of the company, I ran a contest. If you did X amount of volume, you won a brand new Lincoln Continental. Everybody who hit it won that Lincoln Continental. Suddenly, the field came alive.
I bet.
Because
and
I
that's
knew
why you have told me before that over the years you've bought and, you know, given away 600 luxury cars.
Yep.
So I'm guessing that's when it started.
Right then, by that, bought, leased, and or given away 600 cars. The first one was, we started doing well and I bought a Cadillac. So that was one. And then I got in this position, saw how disappointed everybody was and how uninspired everybody was, made the contest I'm just talking about with you. And the accounting department came to me and they said, sit down. After, when the contest day had ended, I said, yeah. I said, are you really willing to give a Lincoln Continental to everybody who hit so-and-so? And I said, yeah. That was the deal, because we budget them individually. You know, would I be upset if somebody won a Lincoln for having done so much volume? And I said, yeah. He said, okay, call your auto dealer. You're giving away 48 Lincoln Continentals. And Bill Patrick,
wow,
the owner of the company, had fought me on the everybody wins thing. He said, no one's going to be excited about that. And I said, well, we'll see.
50
so
people were.
I went, yeah, went back to his office and I said, let's see, you gave away the presidency of company in a Rolls Royce, as best I recall, in a year. I just gave away 48 Lincoln Continentals in, I think it was either 30 or 60 days. So I said, what do you think now? He said, run another one of those contests. Don't stand here talking to me. You know, give another. And so we started off, and there's where the 600 cars came from. I went to Canada to save the Canadian company. It had lost money and reduced sales and increased losses every year for 5 straight years. Bill should have fired the president, but
no kidding.
It wasn't one of my problems at the time. I was just running the United States. And so I went up to save the company. And we didn't have that. We didn't, no one would have sold us a Lincoln Continental. Everybody around there knew that we were in trouble, all the business people. So I came up with, about my fourth day there, freezing my rear end off. I flew up in their first blizzard of the year and was there for 91 days and left in their last blizzard of the year. I said to the field, everyone who does X amount of volume gets to go to Nassau. To the Atlantis Hotel, Paradise Island, for a week. And I figured,
so they can
you
thaw out.
Yeah, so they could thaw out, yeah.
Yeah.
And somebody said, how many do you think you can give away? I said, I'd be happy if I gave away 10. There hasn't been a contest winner up here or anything to win in 5 years. We had to charter an entire jetliner to get the initial wave down there. I knew that many were coming, that many had already hit the figure. And before we were done, we had to charter a second jetliner, two jetliners to Nassau, full of Canadians who'd never won anything in the company, because suddenly everybody could win. Back to skill gap. I thought I was right with the Lincolns in America, proved I was right. Went to Canada, same thing worked with vacations. And later, the same thing worked with cars and so on, too. That's closing the skill gap. You learn something, you make a note. And many of my clients, my mentoring clients, have learned that same lesson indirectly. So, well, we're going to run a contest and the winner's going to get a trip to Hawaii. I said, no. You're going to win a trip. Everybody who does a certain amount of volume gets to go to Hawaii. What if 100 people win? Well, if you structure it right, that's great. And
You've
if
already
the,
done the math. I mean, I'm not sure
yeah,
I understand their angst.
it's just 100. They probably had a vague idea of what one trip costs, and now you're talking 100 times that. But we're also talking 100 times that volume, plus the additional people who tried to win and almost did. So that's a
Even
big
I
thing.
got that. So I
Yeah,
was like,
that's
okay,
a big
I'm
thing on the skill
mathematically
gap.
challenged. I admit it. I need a calculator for everything. And I just found out yesterday that you could make, ugly faces with your calculator. I didn't know that. Somebody taught me that. I was like, oh, that's cool to know. But
Of course, math teachers used to say, you won't
rude
always
faces.
have an adding machine with you. Well,
Yeah,
yeah,
you
you
will.
will.
Yeah.
We didn't know it yet, but
It's in
yeah,
my
you
purse.
will.
Yeah, exactly right. So, but that my point being made, even I understood that those costs are offset. I'm not going to even call it a cost. That investment is offset by increased volume.
Absolutely. What we were doing with 100 winners, let's say, in a given contest, what we were doing was running 100 different contests, each one of which was beneficial to us financially and beneficial to them. And then back to today's subject, that takes the skill gap and the effort gap and combines them because people will put out more effort and develop more skills when they have a reason right in front of them to do it, motivation to do it. And in Canada's case, it was to get the hell out of Canada in the winter.
In the winter, yeah.
Yeah. And in the United States, I asked the guy who picked me up at the airport the day I landed there in a whiteout type blizzard. I said, do you have a snow removal program? He said, oh, yes, July.
Oh, wow. And if you're a southern boy coming, to Canada and it's freezing, I'm surprised you didn't just say, I'll come back in July.
Yeah, the
You let
thought
me know when
crossed
you've
my
got enough.
mind. Call me when the streets are clear.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it's and there's a cultural difference there too. But you're right, it does bring all the those skill gaps to get all those gaps together because now you've got a workforce that's going, oh, I just don't know what to do. And they're whining and they're crying and they're not really being taught. They're not being
Right.
motivated. They're not sitting in a room like you do with other people and go, I just got my money back. This is great. They're not putting forth the effort because they don't know to put forth what kind of effort and when.
And we haven't talked about this, and I know we're running out of time, but here's the good news. You need to develop your skills once. You need to improve them all the time. But once you develop skills and attitude and effort and your talent is coming along, they can't take that away from you. So for me to do something today in an area where I am skilled, an experience is far easier than somebody else because I've done it 100 times. How can you get up on stage and act like you're in your own living room and wander around so comfortable? Because I've given 5,000 paid seminars and speeches, and probably another 5,000 free ones to churches and prisons and so on. So that's a skill you can't take away from me. As Gigi says, as long as we can prop you up in front of a camera, we can make a living. Because
Hello, Gigi.
I've learned how to talk,
Right. And listen, when I started my podcast, gosh, so long ago, 16 years ago now, I admit, and nobody can see me, I'm not on camera. Back in the day, you didn't have the ability to
Right.
be on camera. Not that I would have, but I'd have, gurgling tummy. It's like, oh my God, I don't want to do, oh, I'm nervous. How am I going to sound? I'm going to sound like an idiot. And I would just about talk myself out of every single podcast for months. And then one day, I still do it every now and then. I do my Wonder Woman pose. I will stand up. I will, get in my Wonder Woman stance and put my hands on my hips. Say, I got this, and off I go. But you just have to do it.
I still do. I do it going out of the house to the office in the morning every day, just as a funny habit. I say to myself, it's showtime.
And
And
I've caught myself doing that too. It's like, Ben says showtime. It's showtime. I may be going out to lop off a branch, but I'm going to showtime the heck out of it.
but you're going outside
I'm going outside.
and people can see out there. So that's the first time I did that. A friend of mine, Dick Burns, was with me, and I had traveled 48 hours to get to this seminar, thanks to Delta. That's from San Francisco to Orlando, 48 hours. I was out on my feet, and he was up in the room when he said, you can call this thing off. You can have somebody else. And I said, no, I'll do it. I'm on a script. The script will come out of my mouth no matter what. The stories are scripted. And but I know I must look very tired. I got to the door of the hotel room, opened it up, and yelled into the hallway, "It's showtime!" And Dick Burns still talks about that to this day. He said he transformed himself. He was a beaten down, tired, 48-hour traveler. And suddenly he was Ben Gay, and the world is lucky he's here. That's attitude and falling back on skills. By that time, I'd probably already
Yeah.
given 2,000 speeches. What's going to happen? You and I have talked about this. What are we going to talk about today? And I make notes. I wrote down skill, talent, effort right here on my little notepad and so on. But as we laughed about, talk about whatever you want. I've been at this at a professional level for 61 years. I have my skills in place.
Exactly. And I wrote down a whole bunch of questions just in case we got stuck. I don't know why I even had that thought. I know better. But just in case, because sometimes I'll show up here and I'm tired and I'm not making a whole heck of a lot of sense. Okay, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, I do this. But the thing is, I started looking at the questions and it's like, we've covered all of this through the closers, just in different ways and not exactly in the way that we're talking. But there's nothing really new here. And that's what I meant in the very beginning. If you're in sales, you know that if you stick with what works for you and it's showtime and you show up and you do what needs to be done and you do it with grace and dignity, you're in sales.
That's right. And that never goes away. I've 5,000 paid over that. Now I've been saying 5,000 for several years. Of the 5,000 paid appearances, one time in Fresno, California, for some reason, I don't know if I'd had too much to drink the night before. I really don't recall, but I was flat. I wasn't any good. The words that came out of my mouth were the same words, but it was like somebody reading the New York phone book in a monotone versus Zig reading it and getting you excited about the Smiths, when it gets to the S's. It was just off. And so at the end of the seminar, I said, I hope you took notes because I covered the material technically. It came out of my mouth, but you're all getting your money back. I'm ashamed of this, embarrassed, and the only way to cleanse my conscience is give you your money back. And I did. And it wasn't a whole lot of money, but $100 a head times a couple hundred people, maybe. But I gave them their money back. And somebody said, how often can you afford to do that? I said, never up to now and never again.
Right.
That's a one time, in today's terminology that we're using, that's a one time skill set lesson. You give back a substantial amount of money to people because you don't deserve to make it. You make a mental note of that. That goes into your skill bank.
Yeah, you show up or don't. But if you don't, I mean, if you're there, your body's there, but your brain is somewhere else, make it right. We are out of time. This has been fascinating. Where can people find you, your mentoring program, and of course, the sales Bibles? Those books, y'all, listen to me carefully. Listen, write it down. If you are in sales, and we all are, every 3-year-old is in sales, we're all selling something. Make these part of your entrepreneurial library, at least the closers 1 and 2.
Oh, bless you. For mentoring, and I know you don't know anything about our mentoring program, so just write this down, email me to B as in Ben, F as in Frank, G as in Gay, the numeral 3, BFG3 at DirectCon. That's short for Direct Connect, but it's DirectCon, DirectCon as in November, .net. And say something in there about mentoring, maybe in the subject line, and I'll just send you, no cost, no obligation, no phone calls. I'll just send you a form letter cleverly designed to look like I wrote it just to you, that explains to you the mentoring program. Basically, I do for people what Dr. Napoleon Hill did for me for a fee the last 2.5 years of his life, and what so many other kind people have done for me over the years, Earl Nightingale, Og Mandino. I'm the last living connection with most of the giants, Zig Ziglar, et cetera. And so I'll tell you about the mentoring program. If you want to get the books, and Denise is absolutely right, if you don't have the closers parts 1 and 2 at least, and there's also a 3, 4, 5, et cetera, and more coming. If you don't have those at least, you're that skill thing we've been talking about, you can just scratch that off your list. You need to learn how to sell, and you do that by going to stores, stores dot eBay dot com forward slash Ronzoni Books, RONZONE Books, BOOKS. But all one word. Go there, it'll show you what we're currently offering. I recommend them all, or they wouldn't be there. At least get parts 1 and 2. At least. Now, Denise,
Definitely.
tell them what you're up to, dude.
Oh, geez, what am I not up to? I'm doing, this podcast has been part of my life for 16 years, and I love it. And that's why you landed here. You came here as my guest many, many years ago. We formed a very tight friendship, and you're one of my top favorite people in the world. I've got 5. You're in the top 2. It varies from day to day, but you're in the top 2. So
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say
don't try to pin me down.
it.
But it's just something that I love, love, love to do. And I get to meet people from all over the world. And I've had so many people over the years say, Denise, how do you do it? You make it sound so easy. It's easy, but it's not. It's not simple. There's a lot of work, and you have to really want to do it. But people are coming to me now and say, coach me. Please, can you consult with me? Can you coach with me? And I'm happy to do that. And I'm easy to find online, and you are welcome to contact me directly toll free at 888-719-6711 and ask me about my consulting. And just I'll work with you for a half hour to see where you are. And then if you want to work with me on a retainer basis, we can work that out as well. But leave a message and I will return your call just as soon as possible. Oh, Ben, what are we talking about next week? I meant to ask you earlier.
Well, why don't we talk about what we planned, what I thought we were going to talk about? Again, it doesn't make any difference to me. I'm like John Wayne. Tell me which hat to put on, what door to come through.
And
Yeah,
which horse to smack.
who do I hit? That's good. I'll add that and pretend like he said it. Let's do sell the benefits on starting on page 21 in the closers part 2. And I think that would be good. And it's not the old quarter-inch drill benefit talk. We're going to go into word pictures, how to
Good. Okay.
put them into ownership in their mind.
Got it. Well, I will make a note of that and I'll get it set up for next week. And thank you, everyone, for joining us. And be sure to find us on Your Partner in Success Radio. Just look for our names, Ben Gay III and Denise Griffiths. You cannot throw a stick on the internet without hitting one of us. So thank you for being with us. Send us your questions, by the way. We love to answer questions on the show. Ben, I will see you next week.
Looking forward to it. Take care and be safe.
I will, you as well.